From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, a half hour of commentary, analysis, and perhaps even some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with my fellow panelists, who this week will be talking about how to know when Donald Trump is lying. We'll talk about the fact that people are even buying newspapers these days. Isn't that amazing? And of course, Roseanne Barr. So here we are with Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
How'd you do?
How'd you do, yes, as the earlier Dr. Chartok would have said. Here we are with Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus now, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, and the better question might be, how can we tell when he's not lying?
Well, there you go. We're into the text here.
To reverse the joke, his lips aren't moving.
But a boom. And Kaylin Brown, head of the journalism program at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York.
Gentlemen, how are you all?
Well, very kind of you to say that generous
remains to be seen.
We'll see if we are. Just first to lead off with a little piece of email from Peter in New Paltz, because we're always happy to hear from our listeners. This is apropos our conversation, I think, last week about whether it's appropriate for the news media to identify school shooters. Remember that conversation?
Very well.
Peter in New Paltz says, when some idiot runs out on the field in a baseball game, they never have him on camera. The networks believe, correctly, that if they did, it would happen every 5 minutes. The same could be said about kids who shoot up their schools. A lot of them are socially isolated. Doing something like this, they believe, would transform them from the pathetic little schmendricks they think they are into stars. Everyone will know their name and their faces. They'll be important. That would be irresistible to some, and even if it results in their death, which is an adolescent appeal. I'm convinced if they didn't get media exposure, there would be a lot less of this.
Well, the Times confirmed that this week. The New York Times wrote another story about how Columbine has influenced shooters now, and they spoke to specific examples, including Parkland, et cetera, Newton, and all those, and how those were connected to how it played out for Columbine.
Well, unless we're going to rewrite all of the rules that all four of us came up in journalism, the reporting of a name is important to a story. And perhaps we will evolve over time if we really do think that the notoriety that people believe they're going to get is what's motivating them to do these crimes. Maybe we will change, but I certainly wouldn't advocate it right now. It's what we do. The public has a right to know, and we have that information. We're going to report it.
By the way, if you want to share your views, media@wamc.org is how you share your thoughts with us, and we'll try to get back to that. We have another letter that is actually significantly longer than I can get to. Ends with the word apologies for being so long-winded.
We agree.
Not possible. I'm sorry. It's two long pages of an essay. I'd like to see the Media Project devote more attention to the challenges posed by an electorate that, to a disturbingly large degree, denies legitimacy to the mainstream media and is quick to accept conspiracy theories. What will it take for the media to regain the trust of many of our citizens? Have the media fueled the flame by conflating news and opinion?
Well, I know, Rex, that my job here is to fight with you. But one of the things that I truly believe is that you're right about education, the role of education in all this. It's not a quick fix. People have to know something. Once in a while, somebody will write in and say, there ought to be more civics education in our schools. Yes, it's true. But when my wife and others do civics education, there's always somebody who comes to the school board meeting and says, I don't like opinions, and I don't like anybody giving their opinions in classroom and spoiling our kids. So it's not that easy to have civics education. You can imagine if a teacher these days in some red states said, you know, this guy is really leading this country into fascism. That'd be the last day on the job.
one of the ways I think that we could help gain more trust from those who don't trust the media, especially, is at the local journalism level, that communities that aren't in touch with their local news or vice versa, the news should be providing more coverage of small communities, and then those communities see journalism doing its job and delivering accurate coverage. And then the readers, viewers, listeners there say, oh, that's exactly what happened.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure, but
the reason I think you're wrong, for whatever professor here, is that all of you are journeymen or women, people who have picked up the phones only to have somebody whose kid didn't get covered properly for throwing that last basket in, and they're furious with you. And they think, that's why we hate you, because you don't do it right. And right, according to them, is more publicity.
One of the snippets, I hate to quote myself, but I used to give speeches about the theme being nobody likes their local newspaper. Because over a period of time, particularly in small communities, there is likely to be something that the local newspaper has done or not done that angers you. And there's something else that they've done or not done that angers your neighbor and his neighbor. Mm. And they wind up talking to each other. So as Alan's example was in the sports page, it might be we spelled a name wrong in a wedding announcement or in an obituary.
And it lasts, Ira, forever.
Forever. And, you know, I mean, I'll personalize it. I was at my newspaper 45 years, and I heard every complaint that there could possibly be, all coming under the heading of nobody likes the paper. But I like that paper across the river. Now, if you go across the river, when we opened a bureau, boy, are we glad you're here. Nobody likes this other paper. Nobody likes their local paper.
I actually think that what our writer here, Jeffrey, is urging us to do, that is to devote more focus to the eroding role the mainstream media appears to be playing in informing citizens. I think we're doing that. I think that we are paying a lot of attention to this show, apparently by his standard, not enough, to the question about how we go about this. I feel pulled and tugged on this every single day, and that is this. If we don't write about the president, especially on our opinion pages, that is, if we don't say what's going on here, if we don't blow the whistle on what is continual misstatements of facts, continual questions about policy choices that experts in the field and science say are not correct, if we're not doing that, then we're not doing our job. Our job is truth-telling. But if we do that, if we continue to cover this president the way we have, a lot of people are going to be upset because he is very successful at convincing people that were just out to get him. And the result is we're really torn between trying to be a newspaper for all the people and not appearing to be an elitist, and yet trying to be journalists who fulfill our fundamental truth-telling responsibility, which involves being a referee and saying this is not true, this is not right.
Let me take you up on the gambit here, Rex, of truth-telling. I am sure that you say our business is to be truth tellers, and we know when we're telling the truth. The problem is, of course, that a lot of the people you're referring to don't think you're telling the truth. They think you're lying. I mean, the Trumpers aren't ever going to say, well, thank you, Rex, for telling the truth as you see it. They're saying, it's a big conspiracy. You're lying. It's just not right.
Exactly. And as we had pointed on last week's show, what Donald Trump said to Leslie Stahl, I think, was the reason that he attacks the media is intentionally to denigrate our view, to denigrate the view of the public of the media, so that when he says, whenever we write anything about him, people will say we're lying. And he's very successful.
You know, I had a problem with that last week, not because I didn't share the same upset that you all did about that comment, but I didn't hear any of you mention, why did Leslie Stahl sit on that comment for as long as she sat on that comment? It must not have been an off the record, because she eventually talked about it, but that's something that she should have reported on the nightly news the very next day. How long did she know of that comment?
And again, the comment, just so that everybody who may have missed it floating by in the atmosphere, was...
it was essentially, I demean the press on purpose, because then when they say something nasty about me, nobody will believe it.
Right.
By the way, the one point that letter writer made is one that I know we've talked about this on this program many times, and that is the conflation between news and opinion. And we have particularly zeroed in on the cable news networks, where they will do a 5-minute story or less about something, and then Anderson Cooper or whomever will say, now let's discuss this with our panel. And many people are not able to separate separate the opinion part of the discussion with the news part of the discussion. And it's very simple, or at least it could be partially solved, if instead of putting that eternal breaking news chyron on the screen, they put an opinion chyron on the screen, much as print does on the top of their editorial page. An opinion is labeled as what it is. Or if it's an analysis somewhere else in the paper, it's invariably labeled analysis.
Here is where I hate to, of course, fight with you, Ira. I don't think, I think these people who are running these programs know what they're doing. What's more, I think that there's a progression in which we are getting more and more opinion on all of them, Fox, MSNBC, and CNN. I think CNN in the beginning was extremely careful about the way in which they were reporting things. Now you really see the blood in their eyes when they're talking either with the panel or on the news thing and joking around, as we say, about it. So I think that they now know that this is the way to feather their own nest and to get more people to watch.
One of the things that is an alternative to that is, of course, as Kaylin was saying it from the get-go, good local news coverage. That is, your effective coverage of what's going on locally is an antidote to the displeasure over the broad national media, except that the public conflates it all in their mind. It's all the media, and the president attacks the media as though we're all a monolith.
Do we know that it works? I mean, it's very...
Yes, it's working. Look at his...
The professor of journalism sits here and looks us in the eye and says, as she does to her students, I'm sure, what would really be good is more local coverage. But there sits the station manager at CNN or one of these places, and they say, no, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Look, this radio station, which we're speaking of now, has people, bureau chiefs, all over the place, Springfield and here and there. I know that you guys face this also. And then sooner or later, somebody calls you up and says, what do I care about what's going on in Niskayuna? What do I care about what's going on in Springfield?
Yeah, it is difficult, although if you present, it is always the difficulty of deciding what is your coverage area. But I think that what we have to do is present something locally, like there's no place else that I can turn if I wanted to know what Dominic Sarno is doing. That's the mayor of Springfield. Isn't that amazing that I live in Troy, New York, and I know the mayor of Springfield, Mass, because I listen to WAMC.
And they, by the way, are ticked off in Western Massachusetts because they think that Governor Cuomo is their governor. And they're always bitching about that, as opposed to getting any news from Boston.
Rex, do you still print just one edition a day? Or you used to print more than one edition.
We used to zone our news, right. And now we don't.
Right, and as did we. And we found out something very interesting. We thought we were solving the problem that you just raised. We printed...
You being Alan in this case.
Yes, Alan, I'm sorry. We printed at the Daily Freeman and Kingston three editions by zones. We split Ulster County in half, and we had another zone in Dutchess County. And we did it so that we could eliminate the sort of news that you referred to that perhaps people in Dutchess County wouldn't be interested in and replace it with Dutchess County news. Well, a very interesting thing happened. We had people who were mad that they were not getting all of the news because they said, you know, even though we live in the town of Rhinebeck, the town of Marble Town may be having something going on there that relates to what we would be talking
dirty
about
water
in Rhinebeck. Yeah. So I hear what you're saying, but it worked just the opposite for us. And of course, now none of us can do it because we're eliminating people and expenses from things like extra editions.
And by the way, the first people you're all eliminating, right, Rex? Daily News laid off, I think, 10 more people, just reportorial people. It's the people who are covering the, dare I say it, lower level of news.
Wrong. Actually, we've tried, whenever we've had to reduce staff, we've really tried to protect the reporting core. It's not possible to entirely do so because our staff has shrunk. Everybody's has. And automation has helped us because we've actually been able to, fewer people can produce more pages now with the new pagination systems. So, yes.
Just one other item to help regain trust from the public in the media, I think, is being undertaken by Vox and BuzzFeed, who are now in negotiations or have signed a deal with Netflix. So their reporters are going to be explaining to the viewership there how their stories are produced and unpacked. And I think that that's an effort in innovation and an effort to try to share what goes on behind the curtain.
You know, that's actually a good idea. If people understood the whole process of reporting, if they knew how arduous it is to actually try to get the facts straight. And if they saw, well, you remember Rob Brill, the editor who sits on our city desk and goes through a lot of stories at night, and the process of what we call brilling of an editor who just goes at a reporter and says, now, how are you saying that? Why are you saying that? What is that story? What does that word mean? If people really saw that intense process, I think they'd have more respect.
Well, people don't see it. That's the whole point, and it's one of the reasons that...
But that's why Kaylin is just, did you notice what she was just saying? There's this new innovation to try
She's
to...
She's so goody-two-shoes.
Well, isn't that what your Saturday column is largely designed to do, to explain to readers how the media works?
Well, I tried, but then I just keep letting myself go and actually offering opinions, because I do get sometimes this... I will tell you, I sometimes think I'm the editor of a newspaper, and 10 years from now, I don't want to look back and think that I didn't do my part to point out when lies are lies, mm-hmm. and to point out that there are threats to our democratic institutions right now. And I need to do that if I have access to a column in the paper, instead of just writing about, here's how we do what we do. So I don't know. These are tough decisions, aren't they? By the way, one of the things that is problematic, Kaylin, from this notion of focusing on local news is when you have the Sinclairs of the world. Now, think about Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns Channel 6, CBS 6 in the Albany market, and is now at about, I think, 50%, no, more than that, 50% of American homes now get Sinclair-owned local stations, and they now have these must-carry... they are ordered their stations to have these commentaries from Washington featuring Boris Epstein, who is a friend of the president's.
Which president? Sinclair of the,
no, of the United States of America.
And Google his background, and that guy is widely reported what his background is.
Yeah.
So when we talk about Sinclair, we're wondering if actually local news might be threatened because of the integrity of who is producing that news.
Yes. Thank you for putting that together. And just to cause you a little bit of fear, there's a proposal before the FCC to allow more ownership of a broader range of stations. Like right now, no single owner can own more TV stations than those that reach 39% of American homes. And there's a proposal to take off that cap altogether, which would allow highly capitalized businesses to reach every home in America. You could buy TV stations so that you can reach 100% of American homes. One of the proposals is, well, maybe you can move it to 50%. Clearly, what it is a battle between those with a lot of cash who say we can buy as many stations as we like, and those who say, no, we should still have a limit because we can only afford so many stations. But what it's going to do in any case is consolidate ownership of local TV stations, right, doing local news into fewer hands.
You know, I think, Rex, that you never know what the outcome of a decision like that. And I agree with you. I think that's where we're going. We have a Supreme Court that'll be saying something about freedom of speech. We have the Republicans in control of both houses of Congress making the hay while they can. And I think that's probably the way that we will be going. However, when the right-wing organizations bought so much of AM radio in the United States, it didn't turn out to help them.
Don't think it did?
No. Their listenership is going down. I think that they're following... Public radio listenership, by the way, is going up, but commercial radio is going down.
Yeah, but that's after 20 years. I mean, remember that when Republicans took over Congress in 1994, made Rush Limbaugh an honorary member of Congress.
Absolutely.
Because they said he was responsible. So yeah. I think that the right-wing takeover of the AM radio band has been very effective, even though you're right, of course, the numbers are shrinking now. But, boy, it's been very potent.
Well, I've had my say.
Well, I have a question for you. from using your broadcasting expertise, has AM radio in particular...
That's the first time you've ever said anything.
Yes, well,
here it comes.
Trying to lay out your bona fides. Has AM radio, which I'm told is not doing as well as it once was, are they suffering through the same kinds of layoffs that print newspapers are?
Well, the answer is yes. And that's because, as Rex pointed out quite correctly before... A lot of it's become robotic.
Yeah, you know, that's right, which makes it less chance that there's going to be real local news on these local AM stations.
Almost nobody has real local news.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about the sales force for a local radio station of which I am familiar, and said it's really sort of pathetic. Mm-hmm. They've just sort of given up the ghost.
So we promised listeners at the top of the show that we would say something about Roseanne Barr, the tweet storm that led to her popular show being taken off ABC. ABC had gotten $45 million in advertising this season, was expecting $60 million next season from Roseanne, and instead they basically are eating it and saying, we take a stand here. What's the issue here?
Well, there are multiple media issues here, starting with the decision to use Twitter as a platform to espouse what you think matters and doesn't matter. So Barr is using the same platform that the president is using, which attracts thousands upon thousands of audience members. And she was quickly struck down because ABC chose to act quickly, a huge media company.
Did they have a choice?
Acted quickly. I think the conversation showed that they did have a choice, but they made, you know, there were numbers of ways they could have gone, including eliminating Barr, even though the show's named for her, and then having the show continue or some other way to punish her, but that they moved so quickly, expeditiously, with their president, who is
Channing Dungey, I believe
yes.
her name is.
Yes, Channing Dungey, African-American,
yes.
I believe.
I have to admit some transparency. My son is under contract with ABC Disney to write and produce, so that aside.
So we're not going to listen to one damn thing you have to tell us.
That's
actually
exactly
makes him
right.
an expert. Share yes, all the inside
yes.
scoop here.
Yeah. Well, but they did have a choice because they knew that they were going to lose upwards of 40 or more millions of dollars in revenue by eliminating that program. But they had to weigh that against the potential backlash of lost advertising and
sure.
lost viewers from people who would be outraged that Roseanne was still on the air. So
well,
they,
you know, this is a national phenomenon. Look, public radio, let's face it, it lost Keeler, who is our star.
Garrison Keeler, yeah.
And what did he do? He admitted to having put his hand down a woman's back. So we go from the Weinstein, you know, rape charges and everything else to people who say, well, he looked at me badly or he did. Things are really getting interesting.
There was more to that story than I think the way you're characterizing Garrison
Keeler's
behavior.
Well, we didn't hear
behavior.
A lot about it,
yeah.
especially in the beginning.
Yeah, but you're right. People are drawing lines in the sand, and here's one where ABC actually acted on something. You know, what is one of the intriguing things, Kaylin mentions Twitter. What is interesting is hashtag boycott ABC went from being a liberal meme, that is the liberals were saying that early in the day, to suddenly the conservatives were. Now it's boycott ABC on the right because
that
they got rid of Roseanne.
Well, and it, again, you know, I don't know that I want to use the word credit in the same sentence with Trump, but Trump certainly has, by breaking all of the news or whatever he breaks on Twitter, elevated that platform to the degree that there are people who go on Twitter, I mean politicians, to make their announcements. And I can't remember the subject, but just within the last week, Chuck Schumer had a policy announcement he wanted to make, and he made it on Twitter.
So much so that courts have held that the president cannot legally
right.
block people from his Twitter feed
yep.
because it is a venue for the dissemination
right.
of public information.
Right.
And then, of course, there is the Trump connection to Roseanne because he did go out of his way to welcome her when she did the show and to say how wonderful she was. But also, my concern is that we have a problem here in that other news was being made, very important news, like forbidding women in Arkansas from taking a medical pill that would allow them to abort. This is major news. It got some coverage, but it sure didn't get what Roseanne was getting.
Well, but again, I go back to what I've said often on this program. You have to judge the fact that the newspapers are covering these stories and they're giving them the space that they deserve.
Not enough.
But it's the case. Well, but this particular story may interest you more than it might interest some of the editors, but it is being covered. It's precious little, if any, coverage on cable, which then has only one story at a time and plays it throughout the day.
Well, I would take some great difference with you, Ira, about whether or not the newspapers are doing it.
The highfalutin head of public radio here tells us, oh, you know, it's just terrible that you low lives and commercial media cover stuff.
I didn't say that, and you know I didn't say it. I may have meant it, but I didn't say it.
But the media called out a racist, and that's worth calling out.
All right. On that hopeful and optimistic note, notwithstanding the nattering nabob of negativism at the end of the table, thank you, Spiro Agnew.
That was a shot.
Alan
3-1 again this week.
Ira Fussfeld, Caitlin Brown, and Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.